Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Tuesday, the 12th of August. We talk about Pakistan this hour. As you just heard in the news, a roadside bomb destroyed an Air Force truck on a bridge today in Pakistan's northwest area and killed, our report says, the AP up to 14 people. The Taliban claiming responsibility for the attack, calling it an open war and retaliation for recent military operations in the region. Also, the ruling coalition in Pakistan has moved forward with an impeachment process against Musharraf. They started the proceedings against him yesterday, and we'll be looking at the case for impeachment, what it takes, and what's been happening inside the country of Pakistan, where the economy is just in a dismal state, the stock market having lost 35% of its value since the spring. Inflation is running at 25%. So this is a troubled part of the world and an important part of the world in the fight against terrorism. What's going on is the question of the hour, and we have three great guests with us to give us some understanding of what is going on. Professor Anita Weiss is joining us. She is professor of international studies at the University of Oregon. And Professor Weiss, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for inviting me.
Also joining us, and I guess the two of you know each other, Professor Joseph Elder, who's a professor of sociology at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Professor Elder, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for inviting me, and hello, Anita.
And hello, Joe.
And joining us a little bit later this hour, the author of Crossed Swords, Pakistan, Its Army, and the Wars Within. This gentleman has worked with the government in Pakistan and the World Bank and has been all over the world, so he will be joining us a little bit later this hour. Let's start with the impeachment proceedings against Musharraf. Can you tell me why the coalition government is considering impeachment? Professor Weiss?
Well, they were considering impeachment because, on the one hand, most of the leaders of the coalition government, particularly Nawaz Sharif, who was arrested and then put into exile in Saudi Arabia for nearly a decade, they have personal vendettas against Musharraf. Mm. On the other hand, what happened last year, Musharraf stood for election as president in October. Right before the election was held, there was talk that the Supreme Court might not accept the fact that he even had any standing to contest the election. So before the decision was made in November, Musharraf dismissed the Supreme Court, took away, basically declared a coup d'etat in his own government. So this was the second coup that he had pulled. You know, the first one was in October of 1999 when he overthrew Nawaz Sharif. And so for a while it looked like there weren't going to be elections being held. The Supreme Court has not yet been reinstated. A lot of the media rights had also been taken away. And then, of course, the PPP considers that Musharraf had something to do with, at least was complicit in, Benazir Bhutto's unfortunate assassination at the end of December.
Mm-hmm. Joe, I understand that he can dissolve Parliament and declare a state of emergency. What are the chances he would do that?
It would be very, very risky if he did. That doesn't mean that he wouldn't do it, because he's in something of a desperate position. But technically, that's the way the government has been set up in Pakistan, that the president can declare an emergency and simply disband the parliament. So there's a little bit of a time problem running on here. Will he respond that way, or will he respond some other way?
Mm-hmm. When was it, Anita, that he came to the United States and was such a superstar? He was on all the television shows. He wrote a book. He was our buddy. What happened to that?
Right. The name of the book is In the Line of Fire, in fact.
Yeah, right.
Actually, Musharraf, for all of his faults, I'll tell you, I just could not believe what he did last November. He dismissed the entire Supreme Court. Mm. The entire judiciary went into abeyance because of that. And he did that because the Supreme Court was just about to rule that as an employee of the government of Pakistan, when he contested the election, he was still, he was still a general. That is against the Constitution. Hmm. So we know that the Supreme Court was about to rule that he had no standing to contest that election, and that's why he did that. Other than that, he's probably ruled Pakistan as well as any other government. I don't believe, though of course I may well be proven wrong, I don't believe that he is personally that corrupt. I think that he was surrounded by an administration of very corrupt people. And indeed, some of those people have now actually voted in favor of his impeachment. I know that the PPP/Sherpao group is Aftab Sherpao was his interior minister during the administration. That ended, of course, in November 3rd when he declared the emergency. But now the Sherpao group has voted against him in the vote that took place in the provincial assembly in the Northwest Frontier Province yesterday. So now he's had two provincial assemblies vote in favor. But the wording is funny. It's not just impeachment. But the Punjab Assembly and the Northwest Frontier Province Assembly has now voted in favor of what you might call impeachment. Mm. And why I'm saying that is, it's saying that either he has to stand for a vote of no confidence, or impeachment proceedings will go ahead against him. So obviously, these votes that are being taken will show you that if he stood for a vote of no confidence, he would lose.
Mm-hmm. Do you agree, Joe, that he may not be all that corrupt?
Perhaps more skeptical than Anita is, but it's very hard. Almost every major political figure in Pakistan has been charged with corruption, has been charged with malfeasance, may even have served time in prison. Benazir Bhutto was under a charge, as was Nawaz Sharif. So corruption is a way of life. There are a very small number of very powerful families in Pakistan that sort of move the chairs around. But I've been impressed with the fact that he has done a number of things that I would see were positive. For one thing, he was responsible, I think, for the fact that border crossings in Kashmir declined sharply under his administration. And those were a constant irritant where troops would cross the border from Pakistan into Kashmir and instigate difficulties. And those have dropped off sharply since he became chief in Pakistan.
Mm-hmm. As I understand the reading, tell me if I'm wrong here, that one of the major charges against him is mismanagement of the economy, which sounds like it's in terrible shape, not that a lot of other countries aren't in terrible shape with their economies. Is that a big, big reason for impeachment proceedings, Anita?
Well, first of all, I think that there was mismanagement of the economy. If you want to trace it to him, it's just everybody who was involved. Mm. They mismanaged the economy. But a large part of that also is connected to the fact that Pakistan has historically put a large proportion of its federal budget into the military. As they were reaching some type of rapprochement with India over Kashmir, like Joe was saying, the Pakistan military was adamantly trying to stop the cross-border terrorism that the Indian government had accused the military of being involved with. I mean, not that the military was doing the terrorism, but that they were not stopping people. So, and relations with India started to improve. In fact, it was the summer of 2001, July of 2001, that there was a meeting in Agra between the leaders of India and Pakistan to try to get to rapprochement. But after the U.S. attack on Afghanistan in October of 2001, the Pakistan military has just been given a free hand in the U.S., being the U.S.'s partner to fight, in the fight against terrorism there. And this is really what has really hurt Musharraf on a lot of fronts. They've spent a lot of money in that effort. Yes, they've gotten a lot of resources from the United States. But in some of the actions that they have done, and this is why the vote of no confidence and the impeachment proceedings went on in the Northwest Frontier Province assembly, and that is exactly because of what's been happening in the tribal areas called FATA, the federally administered tribal areas in Pakistan, and even some attacks that have been going on actually in the Northwest Frontier Province. And it was on that basis, in fact, that one of the provincial legislators said because of the heavy-handedness of this administration, that's why I'm voting in favor of impeachment.
Let me get both of your responses, starting with you, Joe, to today's news. Escalation of violence, a roadside bomb destroying an Air Force truck, 14 people, up to 14 people killed, a number of people injured. The Taliban claiming responsibility, calling it an open war in retaliation for military operations in the region. The AP report says the escalation in violence has raised new doubts about the government's controversial policy of negotiating for peace with Islamic militants.
It's indeed a very, very complicated situation there on the border. The fact that the Taliban has been moving in and out of Pakistan, especially in the tribal areas, where the sway of Islamabad doesn't really extend, has made it very, very complicated for anybody to exert control over what the Taliban has been doing in that area. So the situation is volatile, and I imagine while there is instability in Islamabad, this will be used as an excuse by any number of groups to engage in these kinds of activities.
Mm-hmm. So it's just going to get worse, Anita?
Well, I don't know if it'll get worse. You have to remember this has been going on for quite some time.
Yes.
I mean, just last fall. In fact, you know, many people thought that there might be a crackdown and martial law imposed. But people thought it was because of what the Pakistan Taliban had been doing in the Northwest Frontier Province. I mean, they were taking over towns, villages, especially in the Swat Valley. And, you know, they were beheading police officers and the like. And so people thought that there would be some crackdown, but they didn't expect the crackdown to be on the media and on human rights activists and social rights activists. They expected it to be on the Pakistan Taliban, and that did not happen. There was somewhat of a response after martial law had been imposed, and I think the United States had really pushed Pakistan's hand on it. I was in Pakistan at the time when this was all happening. But these types of attacks, unfortunately, not only in the Northwest Frontier Province, but also in Balochistan, have been pretty much ongoing.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead, Joe.
I think one of the most dramatic things that happened in Pakistan was the activity of lawyers. They had typically been suppressed and in the background. And for a while, they became the champions of the notion of the rule of law. They were treated fairly roughly. But I think it once felt there was some vigor in the idea of having Pakistan emerge as a democratic people participant government. There was some hope in the way in which the lawyers rallied in support of the judiciary and in opposition to what President Musharraf was doing.
Mm-hmm.
Let me add something to that. That's a great point that Joe just brought up. Ehtezaz Essen, who's been the leader of this lawyers' movement, had been very, very close to Benazir Bhutto, but he has not... He is not that closely allied with the PPP at this time. He's not leaving the PPP, but he has the Pakistan People's Party. But he has said until those judges are reinstated and the rule of law in Pakistan is reinstated, you know, we just have to press forward. And in fact, I was at a conference with his wife a few months ago where she said that it's now being termed the pinstripe movement.
We're going to welcome phone calls for both our guests, and let me give you our phone number, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. If you're joining us in Milwaukee, it is 414-227-2050, 414-227-2050. We're talking about the possible impeachment of President Musharraf in Pakistan, also looking at violence. Well, there's seems to be news every day. The Taliban has been claiming the bombing in Pakistan today, roadside bomb killing 14 and injuring many more, they say, in retaliation for recent military operations in the region. This is a country that's very important, according to the United States, in fighting the war against terrorism. What would happen? This is an obvious question I haven't asked yet. What would happen if Musharraf did resign? Who in the world would take his place? So we welcome your calls. Lines are open for you right now. You can also send an email. Did I say that? That's talk at WPR.org. Talk at WPR.org. org for you to join our conversation. We have two guests with us right now, Professor Joseph Elder, Professor of Sociology at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, Professor Anita Weiss, who is Professor of International Studies at the University of Oregon, and joining us a little bit later, Shuja Nawaz, who is the author of Cross Swords, Pakistan, Its Army, and the Wars Within. He has worked with the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank. He was with the Ministry of Planning and Development for the government of Pakistan, has worked for the International Atomic Energy Association, for the New York Times, and also for Pakistan Television. So that's coming up later. Okay, to you in a moment. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Second hour of our program today, the author of What's Math Got to Do with It? Helping Children Learn to Love Their Least Favorite Subject and Why It's Important for America. Our guest, Marie Curie, Professor of Mathematics Education at the University of Sussex in England. Pakistan is our discussion this hour. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. If you're joining us in Milwaukee, it's 414-227-2050. And if you'd like to send an email, that's talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org. Our first call is from Adam from Presque Isle. Hi, Adam.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for having the show. I'd like to ask our guests to take their discussion in a slightly different direction. I would suggest that Pakistan is best viewed as a failed state, and in particular, after 60 years, more than half of it under military government, there have been simmering ethnic secessionist movements, and in particular, the boundary between Pakistan and Afghanistan is a completely artificial one. It splits one of the dominant ethnic groups, the Pashtun, clearly in half. They regard the mountains as simply a geographic inconvenience of travel. What do our guests think about the future of Pakistan, and can it be separated from Afghanistan?
Anita, you want to start?
Sure. I don't see what classifying it as a failed state or not a failed state really what it gets you. I would say that this is a momentous time, that in the past, military leaders generally have bowed out from Pakistan by virtue of dying. And that has not happened. And in fact, despite everything that he did, even the declaration of the emergency in November to ensure that he stays on, other than that, though, Musharraf has actually really done a lot. In 2001, starting in 2000, he started really to institute a viable system of local body elections. What we might have, for example, you know, the city council elections, and then what we might have for state, state elections there as a province. The local body election system that he's really tried to push and institute is actually working well in terms of promoting participatory democracy. Even the fact that right now impeachment proceedings are moving forward in Pakistan is a good sign for democracy in Pakistan, because it's actually happening. People are worried. Kathleen had asked Joe Elder before about, might he impose, martial law? There's this clause in the Constitution. It's called 58-2B. And people think that, the question was, should they get rid of 58-2B before moving impeachment proceedings, or should they move forward and later reverse that possibility of the president stepping in? And I think everybody decided that Pakistan is a mature enough democracy now. Things are moving forward. The hope of the elections that happened last February, that it looks very unlikely that he will pull something, with the military. And the chief military officer, Kayani, has said yesterday that the military is going to stay out of politics. Mm.
Joe, you want to respond, please?
Yeah, I think the encouraging thing is the fact that the crisis that could have happened hasn't happened. This doesn't mean that it may not still happen. Mm. But the fact that after Musharraf stepped down as the army chief and made sure that the army chief was a close friend of his, that up until this moment, it doesn't seem as though his friend, the army chief, is going to intervene. That's what makes this sort of both a scary situation and a hopeful situation, that if indeed the army manages to keep out of this, and if the impeachment deliberations continue, at least this effort to use the parliamentary system and the Constitution might work. The impeachment might still not succeed. You need to have two-thirds majority in both the Senate and in the National Assembly, and they may not be able to get that. But the very fact that this is being debated seriously, I think, is a positive sign in a decade where there have not been too many positive signs.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Adam, very much for your call. We go next to Bob from Darlington. Hi, Bob.
Yeah, thanks a lot for taking my call,
sure.
Kathleen. And I know that Musharraf is a well-liked person in Pakistan. Some people don't like him very well, but many do. And I was wondering, let's say they follow through with the impeachment process and he's found guilty, would this create a lot of military, social, and political upheaval in the country and possibly cause a real mess?
Joe.
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear the message.
I'm sorry. I'm not sure why. If he were impeached, would it create great upheaval in the country and essentially a real mess?
I doubt it. His party was not very successful in the February elections. Out of the total of 342 seats, they only won 54. So there's not a support for him. I think what we're seeing now is kind of a struggle between the PPP and the PMI. One is sort of based in Sindh, one is sort of based in the Punjab. And that's, I think, part of what the power struggle is that's going on here. So if the presidency is abandoned, if Musharraf is actually impeached, then the question comes up, who will be the next president? And then the tussle will be between the Sindh section, the PPP, and the Punjab section, the PML, to say nothing of what happens in the Northwest Frontier Province.
Mm-hmm. Where is the U.S. in all of this, Anita? We seem to be very, unless I've missed the news, we seem to be rather quiet.
Well, we're not. First of all, we're not being quiet. We are, President Bush has sent a message to Pakistan that no matter what happens, he wants to ensure the safety of Musharraf. But, in fact, many people are of the opinion that the United States had something to do with ensuring that Musharraf stays in office. And so, because it did seem, there's no proof right now. We'll have the proof in 20 years from now when confidential documents get released. But it did seem quite odd that it was so important to him to stay in power to have the coup on November 3rd. But remember something, though. Pakistan is a provincial, is a parliamentary democracy. And so under normal...
Oops, are you still there?
It's the prime minister who is important. And that prime minister now is Yusuf Gilani from the Pakistan People's Party. And normally the big thing about a president in Pakistan is that he or she has the right to dismiss the legislature. And that's it.
Mm-hmm. Bob, did you have something? Oops, Bob is gone. And Joe, we know that you need to leave us. Thank you so much for your contribution. Appreciated it. I guess he's gone already. We are going to continue on the topic. We just have a different guest joining us and welcoming more phone calls as well. Our number is 800-486-8655. And if you're joining us in Milwaukee, it is 414-227-2050, 414-227-2050. Shuja Nawaz is joining us now, a political and strategic analyst who's worked in publishing and communications all over the world. He is working with the United States Institute of Peace, the Center for Strategic and International Studies of Georgetown, and he has a book, Cross Swords, Pakistan, Its Army, and the Wars Within. He has also worked with the International Monetary Fund, the Ministry of Planning and Development for the Government of Pakistan, the International Atomic Energy Agency, the World Health Organization, the New York Times, and also for Pakistan Television. And so we'll be interested in his view on this and welcoming more phone calls. And Shuja, hello. Thank you so much for being with us. Oops, we got to press the right button. Good morning.
Hi.
Thanks very much for being with us. I don't know if you know Professor Anita Weiss. She is with us as well.
Yes.
Okay, great.
Yes. Hi, Shuja. How are you?
So from somebody who's had a great deal of experience with Pakistan, including being involved in the government at some point, tell me what your thoughts are about impeachment. Would this be for the betterment of Pakistan, do you think, or is it a problematic development?
I think it's probably going to be a long, drawn-out affair.
Mm.
This is something Pakistan and the United States and the neighboring countries cannot afford at this time. I think the best solution would be for the coalition to be able to muster enough of a voting strength to show President Musharraf that they could impeach him, and for him to take the hint and to depart. If this thing drags on, it'll distract from the very serious economic problems that the country is facing. It's going downhill in a hurry, and also the insurgency, which is increasing rapidly.
Mm-hmm. We haven't spent a whole lot of time on the economic problems. What are those problems and what's causing those problems?
Well, one, of course, is something that we are familiar with in the U.S., which is inflation, global
mm-hmm.
inflation, the rise in the price of oil. There have been six price increases for Pakistan in the last year, and that has had repercussions throughout the economy. There have been food shortages. There have been power shortages as a result of which production has suffered. So the country's foreign exchange reserves, which were at a height of $16 billion, have now fallen to below $9 billion, which is effectively hemorrhaging about $1 billion a month. Shortly it's not going to have enough to be able to import or to service its debts. So it may go into a default.
And Anita, what leads us to believe that Musharraf might be able to take care of that problem?
Oh, well, there's very little that leads us to believe that anybody in Pakistan right now can take care of that problem. I mean, look, the Pakistani rupee has been devaluated. Last year at this time, I think it was at least 60, I think it was just under 60 rupees to the dollar, maybe 59 rupees to the dollar. And right now it's trading at 73 rupees to the dollar. So Shuja Nawaz is absolutely right about inflation, and so anything that Pakistan tries to buy in the international market is costing so much more for Pakistan. I agree also that this is going to be a long, drawn-out affair, and that's in the best interest of the country, and it would enable him to save face. Musharraf really should stand up and say, I'm going to step down because Pakistan, you know, this is in the best interest of the country. Do I think he's going to do that? I think 30-70 he will.
30-70. And what happens, Shuja, if he does? Who takes over?
If he does, then at least this particular drama is over, and then the government has no excuse but to tackle the issues that it hasn't yet tackled. It's been in power since February when it was elected, and there's no indication that they've put their arms around the economic problem. The coalition has been fractured in terms of how to fight the insurgency inside Pakistan, and hence has been unable to support the fight against the Taliban on behalf of the U.S.
Mm-hmm. Can you give us an indication, because we tend to get reports from a lot of people in this country that the insurgency is really growing, the Taliban is gaining strength in Pakistan, and a number of people are very concerned about that. Is it growing significantly?
Well, there are two insurgencies, and one is the one that is aimed against the United States' presence in Afghanistan. These are mainly the Afghan Taliban, who have taken along with them a lot of the former Mujahideen commanders who are not Taliban but who have joined the Taliban in trying to get the United States to leave Afghanistan.
Mm-hmm.
These are people like Gulbuddin Hikmatyar, like Mullah Haqqani and his son Siraj, who were involved apparently in this bombing of the Indian embassy in Kabul recently. So that's one element. They are not the ones that are causing serious grief to the government of Pakistan or to the army in Pakistan. there's a homegrown Taliban movement which is now spreading throughout the Northwest Frontier Province, which has broken out of the bounds of tribal culture. It's becoming regional rather than simply tribal and restricted to the tribal area. It's also moved now into the settled area of the Northwest Frontier Province in areas like Swat, which are, you know, Malakand and Swat, which I visited. And it's creating a serious problem for normal life in the country.
Mm-hmm. And so who can lessen that violence? Who can lessen the strength of that movement? It seems to be a thorny issue that nobody knows a solution to.
Well, in my view,
Anita. The issue really is that the Pakistan Taliban, I agree with everything Shuja Nawaz has just said. I mean, the Pakistan Taliban is a homegrown movement, but does not enjoy a great deal of support throughout Pakistan. So by strengthening what can happen through democratic processes, I think would enable people who are more on the fence of supporting them to give up that support.
I entirely agree. And having talked to a bunch of tribal Maliks in North Waziristan on my visit to Miranshah last week, that's exactly right. If we empower them, if we give them the political and the economic strength that they need, they will be able to control this small militant group that is causing all this trouble. But that can only be done in a democratic setup in Pakistan. Our problem has been that we've had an autocrat who promised the U.S. that he would deliver, and that was Musharraf, and who really did not focus as much attention on this as possible. And in the last 8 years, basically continued the policies of earlier governments in not developing the border regions economically and socially. And we are paying the price for that, Nick.
Hmm. And so why didn't he focus attention on that?
Because it wasn't in his interest. You know, his power stemmed from the army, because he also was the chief of army staff. And the urban population where he had made his alliances. So this was really not something that that was very important for him.
But remember, nobody had ever put importance on this before either.
Exactly.
And unfortunately, I mean, right now the United States is engaged in trying to institute some type of economic development in that area. However, I don't think that this is a wise time to do what the U.S. is trying to do. Right now, USAID is on the brink of getting their budget for Pakistan tripled. But I just hope that the United States can work with Pakistanis on the ground, not just the usual government officials, not just the usual processes, but actually work with people on the ground to facilitate identifying needs for development assistance and then trying to implement them. Because if you do the top-down approach, it's not going to help. It's not going to help in garnering support for U.S. policies, and it's not going to actually be effective in promoting economic growth.
Mm-hmm. Let's go back to phone calls. Kamal is joining us from Elkhorn. Hi.
Hi, my name is Kamal. I'm actually from Pakistan. Assalamu alaikum, Nawaz Saab. I take a contrarian view. The biggest thing that's been touted is Musharraf having removed the judges as the big undemocratic action on his part. I, having dealt with judiciary in Pakistan, can tell you that judiciary in Pakistan is corrupt, to say the very least. If Mr. Nawaz has ever petitioned in front of a court in Pakistan, they'll understand what a corrupt system that is. And the reason to oust Musharraf is because he basically got rid of the judges. Judges are split here. There are some judges who want to give immunity to Musharraf. There are some judges who want to give immunity to Mr. Zardari. Some want to give immunity to Mr. Nawaz Sharif. You know, it's not the judiciary that you know we would like to think that it is. And the other reasons that are being given is the economic decision, I really don't think that Musharraf has a lot to do with the economic situation in Pakistan. The whole globe is feeling the pinch of the gas price increase, including the United States. I personally feel at this point to try to remove Musharraf is going to be very detrimental to Pakistan, and I think also directly to the United States, because instability in that part of the world is not good news, especially considering what's going on between Russia and the war between Russia and Georgia. These are, I would say, at least continuous parts of the world, and things changing here have an impact on the other side.
Anita, would you like to start?
Sure. Number one, I don't think that removing Musharraf would necessarily destabilize Pakistan. As I said, usually the president of the country is more of a figurehead than anything else, and the big role that the president has, and unfortunately has used a lot in Pakistan, is to dismiss the parliament. I think that there's enough of a groundswell of support to against Musharraf that there's not going to be, this won't be destabilizing. But as Shuja Nawaz had pointed out previously, it's just going to be expending a lot of time, a lot of energy on this, instead of really trying to hunker down and to deal with the critical economic issues that are confronting the country, which the administration that was voted in February has not yet done. And I think that is the possibility for instability in Pakistan. People had so much hope that after, you know, this election was going to be held in February, and by all accounts, it's been one of the freest and fairest elections Pakistan has ever had. I mean, there's always a little bit of Beimani corruption, you know, in elections, but this is one of the freest and fairest they've ever had. But that they're not following through. Nothing has really happened. They have not even reinstated the judges. And while I agree that, you know, the whole system of how courts work in Pakistan could certainly be improved, that judges disagree with each other, I think, is a very healthy sign. It's not a bad thing for judges to have disagreements.
Shuja, would you like to respond?
Yes, I would add that on all the polls that have been conducted in Pakistan in the last 6 months indicate that Musharraf's personal popularity is extremely low, which means that he doesn't have popular support, and so there won't be an upswell should he depart. The issue of the judges is not just a question of their corruption or lack thereof. It's really symbolic of the changes that have occurred in Pakistani society in the last few years. We now have a burgeoning news media that, you know, for good or bad, is giving a lot of information to the people. You have a rising role of the civil society. A lot of NGOs are active, in spite of the government, providing services to people throughout the country. You have civil society movements asserting their rights in public. All these are good signs, and it's really that process that needs to continue rather than harken back to some kind of an autocratic system, which Musharraf represents.
Could I just say one last thing before I go?
Sure.
I totally agree with the fact that he's lost a lot of his support, and he's very unpopular. I don't know if that is a valid reaction of the public. You know, the public is entitled to the opinion. I do still believe that removal of Musharraf from the presidency will have detrimental effects, not only for the country, but I understand it's a democratic you know, it's a democratically elected parliament, and they'll take whatever actions they feel are necessary. But I still believe that it is something that is going to have international consequences. It's I do not believe any leader in the political cadre has the ability or the guts to fight the growing terrorist movement in Pakistan, which is, you know, it used to be, I'm originally from Karachi, which is the southern part of Pakistan, and we used to hear about stuff going on in, you know, the northern areas, and now, you know, people come and take over mosques in Islamabad, there are bombings in, you know, in very core parts of Pakistan. So, and I really doubt any of the of these gentlemen, Mr. Nawaz Sharif or Zardari or his, whoever his partner is going to be, has the capability or the guts to fight the terrorism in the way that Musharraf has done thus far. And I think his departure will show, you know, the loss. Right now we can say, well, Musharraf's not doing enough. But when he'll go, then we'll see, you know,
even
how bad
nice.
It gets. And I'm really sad for Pakistan because I really think he's a good guy. He should stay.
Thank you very much for your call, Kamal. We'll take more phone calls in a moment. Our guests are Anita Weiss, who is a professor of international studies at the University of Oregon. Also joining us is Shuja Nawaz, who's the author of Cross Swords, Pakistan, Its Army, and the Wars Within. And he has a longtime history with the country. He was with the Ministry of Planning and Development for the government of Pakistan and also worked for Pakistani television. He's worked for the New York Times as well. But he was the main English newscaster from 67 to 72. Here's our number. We have a couple lines open if you'd like to join us. 800-486-8655. If you're in Milwaukee, it's 414-227-2050. We're talking about an impeachment process against President Musharraf. And we're also looking at the increasing fighting on the part of the Taliban, including today an escalation in violence where a roadside bomb killed up to 14 people and injured many more. Western officials say it has given Taliban and al-Qaeda time to regroup and more freedom to operate. All right, more phone calls in a moment. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Second hour of our program today, the author of What's Math Got to Do with It? Helping Children Learn to Love Their Least Favorite Subject and Why It's Important for America. Our guest says that in September of 89, the nation's governors gathered to set a challenge for the new millennium. American children should top the world in math and science by the year 2000, and yet nearly 20 years later, the U.S. sits near the bottom of international rankings of math achievement. She says there is evidence that mathematics may have the potential to be quite appealing, depending on how it's taught. So that's the second hour of our program. All right, let's go back to phone calls, and we go to Kwamar from Manitowoc. Hi.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
It's quite interesting. There are many things you have talked about, starting from the one of the callers previously and the response from Professor Anita regarding Pakistan as a failed state to the impeached president and then the economical fallout and the insurgency and terrorism. So I'm not sure. You don't have that much time even for me to cover all those, what I want
right.
to say. But let's start with the failure of Pakistan as a state. I think, including America, many international forces have contributed very well into that state of Pakistan after 60 years. And as far as the impeachment of President is concerned, your host, our guest, cited some of the things good done by President Musharraf, including the local body elections. I don't want to go into details for the sake of time, but I have a question. After 8 years of total control, at the end of that, what he has achieved, if any single thing positive in Pakistan, if that was the case, why is in a failure state after 8 years? This was never a time where Pakistan political forces were given enough time to establish grassroots leadership, and every time there was a chance, international forces supported, including especially America, all the dictators for their short gains to support them. And at the end of that, every one of those their supporters was thrown away like a toilet paper. History is there, starting from Ayub Khan to Ziaulhaq and now Musharraf. I think because of all that, Musharraf should be made an example so people would not, at least domestically in Pakistan, will support that kind of a person who has done such a damage to the country that 60 years have been lost for this country and 30-plus years by those dictators supported by the United States. As far as the economical status is concerned, saying $14, $15, $16 billion were there, end of the election, in 4 months, what has changed that has been draining that amount? It was all inflated and artificial number projected because they just wanted to stay in power. And now, when the real people came in power, they realized it was all artificial. Nothing has been changed in the four-month policies which can explain the downfall of the economy. Yes, there is definitely a global factor affecting the economy of every country, including the most powerful and rich country in the United States, where we live in now, is suffering the same problem. So I don't think you can blame any political setup at this time to explain that. And I think the last thing I would say, if anything American can do for Pakistan, is stop supporting those terrorists, not only, and I call him terrorist, I mean Musharraf, and dictators who have done the damage to the country and the nation, which is irreversible.
Okay, thanks for the call. Anita, I think that goes to you.
Yes, I agree with what the, with just about everything the caller just said. Because, I mean, the reason why I went back to 2000, 2001, to what he tried to do with the local body, the local body elections, everything just stopped after you know, September 11th. I was in Pakistan at that time, and you felt that you were in the second ground zero, that the United States basically said to Musharraf, we're going to tell you how to jump, and we're going to tell you how high to jump, and if you don't do it, Pakistan's also going to be attacked. And I think that there, you know, I don't have any proof that that's what the U.S. government said, but I have a, you know, it felt very strongly that all of a sudden there was a change in direction about everything that this administration was done, that this administration had been doing. The late Omar Asghar Khan, who unfortunately himself was assassinated in the summer of 2002, he was a long-term political activist in Pakistan, one of the founders of Sangi, fantastic NGO in the Northwest Frontier Province. He had believed in Musharraf. He had believed in the reforms for local body elections and a real democratic transition that he thought that Musharraf was going to try to institute. And I think that you could say that there were two Musharraf administrations, one from the time when he took over in October of 1999 until September, October 2001. And he really did try to bring about some positive change. But after that, it really has not solely been Musharraf's administration.
And thanks for your call. Let's go to Frank from Madison. Hi, Frank.
Hello.
Hi.
To what extent would the guests believe that this is a replay of the 19th century great game? And what we see from Persia to Afghanistan to Pakistan is a major power play where external actors are destabilizing the region. And then secondarily, to what extent is Musharraf in an impossible position, one imposed upon him by the United States, where the West has stayed in Afghanistan far too long? He necessarily had to balance the local interests and those of the United States, which was a very dangerous situation, and he believed he could ride it out, but we're still in Afghanistan. So thank you.
Thanks for the call. Shuja Nawaz, you want to take that?
Yes. First of all, the United States did very specifically ask Musharraf to decide on 9/11, are you with us or are you against us? So he knew that he had to make a decision. Personally, he was inclined against the Taliban, and this has really been his paradox. And in fact, in my book, the chapter on him, I call it the liberal autocrat, because there's a part of Musharraf that was liberal, which was the part that took over the country in 1999 and promised all these reforms. But then the autocrat took over and decided that he knew best what was to be done on behalf of the people of Pakistan without consulting them. And so from 9/11 onwards, he essentially consolidated his power, and essentially democracy was on a downslide, and eventually so was Musharraf. That's my reading of the situation. In terms of the foreign powers, yes, the U.S.-Pakistan relationship itself has been a kind of a roller coaster relationship. The United States has, with a wink and a nod, encouraged military takeovers, starting off with Sikandar Mirza in October 1958, followed immediately by Ayub Khan and others. It also worked out a good relationship with Ziaul Haq once there was a need to bring him on board to fight the Soviets in Afghanistan. So it's only because the U.S. comes up with a policy in which Pakistan has a small role to play that it cozies up to Pakistan. There's been a lot of talk now in Washington of a Pakistan-centric policy. And if that is the case, and it's a long-term relationship between the people of the United States and the people of Pakistan, then you may have a much more stable relationship.
Mm-hmm. Thank you both so much. It was an extremely informative hour, and I appreciate your time. Anita, thank you.
You're welcome.
Shuja, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Our guest, Anita Weiss, professor of international studies at the University of Oregon, and Shuja Nawaz is the author of Cross Swords, Pakistan, Its Army, and the Wars Within. And he has served in a number of arenas. He is a political and strategic analyst. He writes for leading newspapers. He has headed three separate divisions of the International Monetary Fund. And has worked for the Ministry of Planning and Development, Government of Pakistan, also a television reporter for both the New York Times and for Pakistan Television. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning, who really went all out and got us some great guests for this hour, as she always does, and to John Treader for on-air production here in our studios in Milwaukee. News ahead, math then on the subject. Don't go away. This is the Ideas Network.